Hello, people of the world. It is Sunday, and that can only mean a thousand things, but one of them being, he says, losing his voice. I sound a bit groggy. One of them is recording the Ben Briggs podcast, and we are here now doing it. Holy fucking shit. I hope you've all had a good week, people. It is Sunday. It's been fucking cold today. I've had a hot water bottle on my feet. I'm currently drinking peppermint tea. Peppermint tea, Ben. What are you? Some sort of merry? Yeah. And I tell you what, there is nothing better I like than the warm taste of toothpaste. Why is it everything, every fucking thing that's good for you or meant to be good for you doesn't taste as nice as Revels? So I have no idea. I have no idea, people. Anyway, it is Sunday. Sunday, people. Let's get on with the podcast, shall we? Let's stop fucking around. Yeah, we've got some serious shit to be talking about today. I have had a lovely week. Thank you very much. I've done a few gigs. One of which stood out more than the other, so I'll talk about that. I did a charity gig in Findon. Holy shit, there's nothing like doing a local gig where you get back home by 9:30. First on, bang, opened, off stage, home by 9:30. The feeling of that, sensational, people. Sensational. I'm not gonna lie to you. Why would I? Why would I lie to you? We're open and honest here, aren't we? It was for the Northampton Air Ambulance. By the time I left, they'd raised £36. on the night, apparently they raised a lot more than that by the end of the night. But at the end of the first section, they raised £36. So I would like to say that my impact on the evening was considerable. Being as before I went on stage, they'd raised £36 and there was over, well, a lot of money raised afterwards. Let's not go into details. Although I don't know how much those things cost to run. I imagine they're not cheap, are they? So while I was on stage, there was like £36 in the kitty. So I was like, nobody around this area have any sort of horrendous serious accident because no one's coming for you. Not on a £36 budget. Anyway, that's for sure. It was quite nice, though. It's quite kind of an older crowd. Charity dues are always a bit weird because you always get it's not a regular comedy savvy audience. Like most nights that you do as a comedian, they're like a comedy savvy. They go to the gig, whether the gig runs once a month or once every, you know, once a week or whatever. If somebody's going to a comedy club, then they're probably not going every week, like to one of the clubs in the cities. But you go out to the more rural areas and they'll have a comedy night like once every month and it's the same audience that goes. So they begin to be a bit comedy savvy and know when you're joking rather than taking things seriously. He says with an ultra, I don't know what's going on with my voice today. There is some sort of, maybe this is it. Maybe this is my voice finally breaking. Who knows? They weren't a particularly comedy savvy audience. They were quite older, just by the fact that the MC, Darren Mortyboy, mentioned Dave Grohl, and there was two people on the front row who looked completely perplexed. And they looked that whole way throughout the whole of my set. There's nothing better than that, looking on the front row. And they're just staring at you, absolutely bamboozled and possibly disgusted by what you're saying. So I don't know, people. I don't know. Anyway, it is... let's clear that throat. It is Remembrance Sunday today. It was the 11th of the 11th yesterday. I completely forgot about that. I know, I'm one of those terrible people who doesn't have a minute silence at 11 o'clock on a Saturday morning. But it was, that was yesterday. Usually when you're at work, when you have a normal job, and it's on a work day, they'll stop everything, won't they? That was always a, you know, a nice, but nobody's thinking, are they, about that? They're just thinking, oh, this is fucking awkward. That's basically it, isn't it? All the times, like when I was at work for Remembrance Day, nobody was really thinking of any lost loved ones. Like in my family, I think like my grandpa was like an engineer or something in the war, and my other grandfather was invalided out, I think. I don't know. I don't really know a lot. I should have asked, but it's too fucking late now. Yeah. Now I'm interested in all that shit and not like in my teens playing football, kicking a ball against the wall, as I was most nights when I was a teenager. Now I'm actually interested in my 40s. They've gone. There's no one to ask, is there? You know? So, yeah, it's all a bit of a mystery. I have no idea. But, yeah, all I remember is being at work, having those minutes, 2 minutes silence or whatever. I think it's 2 minutes silence, is it? They extended it. Is that something to do with, like, more people? You know, just a little bit of extra time to remember people. Oh, no, I'm making light of this, people. I know the huge sacrifice they fucking made so I can be spouting this shit on a podcast without fucking Nazis knocking at the door. It's, yeah, it was always like kind of uncomfortable, and you're trying to not make eye contact with anybody. And then there's always somebody who used to forget, and they'd start, you know, start talking or walking in the office. Ah, dear. You're just sitting there going, oh, God. That's how you realise how long a minute can be. That's what it is. It's that. And, well, from, well, I perfectly know how long 20 minutes is. That can be. It's all to do with perspective and circumstance, isn't it? If you're on stage and you're absolutely having a flyer, smashing the shit out of it and murdering that gig, 20 minutes just goes by. You're dying on your ass. And you've got a whole audience of elderly people just staring at you. Like you're some sort of spawn of Satan for the stuff you're saying. Oh, man, that 20 minutes can last a lifetime. That's for sure. Ah, Jesus. Anyway, the charity gig was all right. I got, I've been videoing at every gig now. I do. I've been using the old a lapel mic as well. So I'll be posting some of those bits up, I suppose. That's what you fucking got to do these days, isn't it? You've got to post up that shit, haven't you? You know, you've got to get, you know, that's it, isn't it? You've got to have exposure. That's what it's all about. Let's have a little bit of this fucking toothpaste mixture. I really don't see the appeal. I bought peppermint tea because I was advised to, because I had a bad stomach at one point. I'm not convinced by it, really. I don't know if that's peppermint tea or green tea. It tastes like peppermint tea is basically just green tea with a hint of toothpaste, whereas obviously green tea is just green tea. That's meant to be good for you, isn't it? I don't think you put milk in it. Give me a proper Yorkshire tea any day, and I am fucking loving life. I tell you that. I talked far too much about tea on this program. Program show, what the fuck is it? I have no idea. Anyway, in the news this week, talking of Remembrance Day and old soldiers not to be forgotten, scandal with Captain Tom's money this week. Captain Tom's daughter, the slimy fucking cockroach, has that been proved? Can I get liable for that? I don't know. What's she going to take from me? Probably every fucking thing, like she did from the fund. Oh, here we go. That's it. The legacy of Captain Tom. I know everybody got a bit carried away. If you're not aware of Captain Tom, say you're listening from other countries. Hello there, other countries. Thank you for listening. Make yourself known. Give a shout, so I can give a shout out to some places. I see on the stats, got a few listeners in the States and Germany, some in Spain. Holy hola. There you go. That's as far as my Spanish goes. If you're not aware of Captain Tom, he was an old man. He was an old man. He walked around his garden during the pandemic. He raised a lot of money because a lot of middle class people, he fitted the profile of what middle class white people like to support to make themselves feel and look good. Is that it? Is that too much? I don't think so. I think that was pretty much it, wasn't it? Middle class people creamed their little knickers when Captain Tom was being forced round his garden by his daughter, whipping his back. Come on, we need a spa. dear. He completely fitted the profile of what middle class white people like. He was a war hero, weren't he? He supported the country. And he was old and infirm, and he was doing something for charity. And everybody went, holy fucking shit, I can live vicariously through him by sponsoring him. And the nation went mental for it, didn't they? Any other charity, you know, at this point, there were still homeless people outside. These same people stepping over them in shop doorways to get their groceries. Weren't they? Queuing up outside homeless people outside Sainsbury's in Northampton, not giving them a fucking look. And yet, just having that uncomfortableness of them being close to them as they're queuing to get in Tesco's because there was only a certain amount of people allowed in there at that time. But something like this that got national press and was big on social media, yes, I'll give money to that. I don't want to give money to somebody who's directly within a meter of my space. No, he looks dirty. He looks too dirty for me to give money to. That's about it, isn't it? I think, you know, we're all guilty of that at times, aren't we? We can all do a little bit more, I guess. But no, Captain Tom took all the money. And then, as it turned out, his daughter had been plundering. She'd been Dick Turpining. Is that a, yeah, I'm not sure that is a, that's a term. She wasn't even Robin Hood. She wasn't taken from a rich fund and given it to herself under the pretense that she was building some sort of memorial or some sort of museum. And it turned out that she'd just built a spa at the end of a garden. I mean, you've got to admire the fucking balls of that. Haven't you? Just the fucking balls of that woman. Bill saying, oh no, it's going to be a museum to Captain Tom and commemorate him and what he did. Next minute, there's a fucking swimming pool company there installing it. Oh dear. So anyway, that's all come out this week. It's all been in the news this week. So, you know. I'm sure she could have, you know, siphoned off a job for herself, couldn't she? You know, like a trustee. I think that's what she did, didn't she? That's what they do with all these charities, isn't it? Say they're trustees and then siphon off a massive whacking pay rise for themselves, isn't it? That's what they do with normal charities, isn't it? That's what Oxfam did as well, didn't they? They did all that sort of thing. And, it, you know, it's shocking. Something like 2% of the money that you hand over to people actually goes to helping others. The rest is like administration fees. It's like the fucking charges, the management fees on a fucking apartment, isn't it? Everything's admin fee, isn't it? They find fees for everything, don't they? I mean, if they were actually running a household, people for these management companies, they're just spraying money all over the place. They're like that woman who won the lottery. Or that Tony Carroll who won the lottery. He was just fucking spunk 9 million quid at the wall. That's what management fees are like. And that's close to home. That's too close to home, that is. That's what management companies are like. And it seems like that's exactly what Captain Tom's daughter was like as well. See, you can never fucking trust your kids. Although, ultimately, he's to blame, surely. Is he not? Is he not to blame for that? Here's a controversial slant on this that I've just thought of. Surely, if it's his daughter, he's brought her up. He's brought her up as with terrible, terrible fucking morals. Morals that will plunder from a fucking charitable scheme. Surely, ultimately, he's to blame for the theft from his own charity. Is that going too far? Is that a step? I don't know. Maybe there's something in that. I don't know, people, but that's all been kicking off. Let's have a little bit. That seems to have upset my stomach a little bit, and I need. And I need just that thought that he's ultimately to blame for it. Jesus, not bringing up his daughter good enough. I need some peppermint tea. Here we go. Anyway, other things I've been up to. Also, my stomach feels a little bit like that because it is, what time is it now? It's 6:10 in the evening. And I've just had a vegetable masala and it was possibly a little bit too spicy for me. So that's something I'm going to have to deal with in the morning. I mean, I love spicy food, but the older I get, the more it seems to play havoc with me. I love it, you know, love spicy food. Obviously, no meat, nothing with a face here, people. You know what I mean? We've got a conscience. Not that I'm judging anyone who eats meat. Suddenly everybody gets on the defensive. One of those vegetarians, are you? Yeah, you're fucking right, I am. Anyway, things I've been doing this week. I've had a bit of a documentary session. I ain't going to lie to you. Netflix has been ablaze with documentaries this week. There's Sylvester Stallone documentary, the Robbie Williams documentary. We'll fucking get to that in a minute. And one of the most interesting ones I've ever seen and absorbing. But I think part of it was absorbing because of the fact that it's subtitled and you have to zone into it, don't you? You can't be messaging people. You can't be texting people when you're watching a documentary that's got subtitles or a film that's got subtitles. Another film I watched this week, which I've seen before, Parasite. Love that film so much. Was the Rene Higuita documentary. Now, if you're not aware of Rene Higuita, why would you be unless you're a football fan? Holy shit. You may be aware of him because of his, he was a goalkeeper for Colombia. He was the one who did the scorpion kick. I don't know why I'm doing that with my hands, but, you know, flicked his legs up at the back and against England at Wembley, which had been apparently, according to the documentary, practicing a lot and wanted to do it on like a big stage. So he did it at Wembley. But what a fascinating life. He was a fucking maverick. And just shows the sort of corruption within the Colombian government, because there was like someone got kidnapped or something like that, and he helped facilitate her release because he knew sort of like, I think he was friends with Pablo Escobar, you know, as you do, innit? I suppose like famous people want to hang around with famous people. If you're, you know, if you're from the States, it's going to be Hollywood stars. If you're from England, it's going to be, I don't know, reality stars. That's all we've got, isn't it? Obviously, we've got Hollywood stars, but they ain't over here. They're all over in Hollywood, milking those teats for as much money as they can get. And I don't blame them, personally. You know, if you're in Colombia and you're a massive footballer over there, who are you going to hang around with? You're going to hang around with drug dealers. Now, let's stop the conversation there for a moment. I'm not saying everybody in Colombia is a drug dealer. Yeah. I'm just saying they've got the best ones, haven't they? You know, they've got the fertile land for the coca plant, haven't they? They have, you know, a potentially corrupt government that allows that. Possibly. I don't know. I haven't really looked into it. But it definitely seemed like that was from the documentary, that the government was pretty corrupt. Not that I'm saying all South American governments are corrupt or even Colombia's government is corrupt. You have to I am teetering across. Cracks in the pavement here, people. Anyway, at the time, so he was mates with Pablo Escobar, and then he facilitated this woman's kidnapping release. But because the Colombian government wanted to catch Pablo Escobar, because he had escaped from prison at the time, his own fortified built prison that he built himself and then escaped from it. It's a fascinating story, that is. I read a book on it. It's absolutely fascinating story how he was still basically running all of his operations from his own prison that he had built and designed to his own specifications. If you go to prison, that's the way you want to fucking do it, innit? You don't want to be in with everybody else, do you? You know, two to a cell. You know, if I ever went to prison, I'm not saying I've done anything wrong to go to prison. But if I ever get, my fucking luck would be I would be stuck in a cell with someone who was possibly had the worst flatulence problem ever. Wasn't clean, poor hygiene, poor personal hygiene, poor possession hygiene. Ah, God, that would be my own personal hell, wouldn't it? Although saying that, I've had past relationships that have been like that. definitely filth everywhere. Dear, that's why moving out of Northampton didn't last too long. You can only take so much of somebody else's filth when you clean up, and then it's just back to being filthy again. Ah, dear. 2 years. Never forget. Love it. His story, René Higuita's story, is absolutely fantastic. So I think he spent about a year in prison where they were torturing him and stuff like that, trying to find out where Pablo Escobar was. And he didn't fucking know. So it's just a fascinating documentary about a sort of like maverick footballer who, as a goalkeeper, was basically like a sweeper and like sort of like what they used to call a libero. You know, a Beckenbauer sort of character from the back who'd like start the play from being the goalkeeper and not just rolling it out, like taking people on. And then I think he scored like something like 49 goals. He used to take free kicks, penalties, everything. Ah, amazing. We miss you need characters like that in sport. Somebody a little bit different, a little bit of a maverick, just to give a bit of, you know, a bit of interest, leave a bit of a legacy rather than, you know. I mean, like, he did fuck up quite often. But the thought was there. But it was good that it was essentially his teammates who got him released, because they kept campaigning to get him released and he finally got released. I watched the Sylvester Stallone documentary. That's fucking brilliant. He's just like so... I always thought he was, you know, not particularly sort of like... what's the word? What's a diplomatic word to say? I didn't think he was particularly with it, but he's very switched on, very articulate in what he says. And obviously you can tell that, like, from the films, particularly the Rocky films, like the first one and the sixth one, which oddly enough are my favourites. And oddly enough, he said they sort of like follow each other. Just some of the things he comes out with about, you know, like fighting back, not giving up and that sort of thing, you know. The world's going to get you down and that sort of thing. It's not about how hard you can hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. That's it. That's a fucking brilliant quote. I've got that on the wall here at Briggs Towers. So that's good. And then I watched the Robbie Williams documentary, which was, the Robbie Williams documentary is how it seems like it's Robbie Williams has watched other documentaries about people and thought, this is how I need to portray myself. there didn't seem to be anything genuine in there. You know what I mean? It's like he's chatting offhand randomly to the camera and he's sitting on the bed in his pants and a fucking vest top. Hey man, I'm just sitting here chatting. Yeah, you got a, you're fully aware that you've got a film crew in front of you. So this has all been orchestrated to make you look like, you know, you're just chatting. Just woke up out of bed and just chatting on the bed about stuff. But this is, you know, who let the camera crew in, Robbie? You're not fooling anyone, son. Yeah, and obviously he discussed how he's got depression, how he used to get anxiety. It's hard. It's very, very hard to sympathize with a multimillionaire who has lived all of his dreams and achieved everything he wanted to achieve. I know people get depression. I know that. I know people get down and people, you know, have mental health issues. Here we go, serious tone. But you know, it's hard to sympathize with somebody when they've achieved everything they've wanted to achieve. The only thing I don't think he's achieved, which I think he wanted to be like a rock star, sort of like God. Somebody like Liam Gallagher, somebody deep, somebody meaningful, somebody who sort of like was the zeitgeist of that time. And he never achieved that. He was always the poppy side rather than the rock and roll side. And I think that's something that still comes across like in the documentary and irks him. It just seems like he's always wanted to be Liam Gallagher, but he's ended up being Robbie Williams. You know, he never wanted to be like a Gary Barlow, but he's just slightly cooler than a Gary Barlow, in my opinion. And it just seems to come across like just little things he says in the documentary. He doesn't really seem genuine at all. He seems like really sort of, I don't know, I just got the idea that none of it, everything seemed to be set up for the cameras. And there's obviously a lot of historical footage in there and things like that as well, but it just seemed that everything just seemed orchestrated to the cameras. I know everything like that is, but like you look at the Sylvester Stallone documentary compared to that, if you watch those two back to back, Sylvester Stallone's sort of like full of passion, full of honesty, and really sort of like opens up and down to earth about his process, what he went through, and where he is now. Whereas Robbie Williams just seemed to still be trying to create an image for himself of somebody that he's not and never going to be. It just seemed, like I said, like sitting on the bed in a fucking vest top and your pants. Really? You can't put on some fucking jeans and a shirt and sit in a chair? Really? This bit has to be done in your bed, which is probably not your bed anyway. And it's a fucking studio set in it because you want to be like, hey, man, I'm just sitting here chilling, just talking about my life. Put some fucking jeans on, Robbie. You know, you're on fucking Netflix, son. I don't know. It just seemed a bit, it just all seemed a bit contrived to me. And as a long-standing documentary, especially autobiographical documentary watcher, it just seemed like another way to cash in. You know, it's like he's gone, we've got all this footage from the past. Holy shit, what can I do with it? It's going to take fucking ages to cut this up and put it on TikTok. What we'll do, we'll get a Netflix deal. We'll offload all of this shit onto them. They can sort it all out and I'll sit around in my pants and talk in between the bits. Sound good, guys? And somebody's gone, yeah, that sounds great, Robbie. We'll do that. Make sure you wear your best black pants. We'll flog it to Netflix and we'll probably do another one in a few years' time as well, depending on how it goes. They'll lap this shit up, Robbie. It's you, isn't it? It's you. What's me? Nobody knows, Robbie. Nobody knows what you are. But whatever that is, that nobody can define, not even yourself, we'll fucking flog that to Netflix. I don't know. Maybe I'm being a bit harsh. Write in and tell me. That's it. What are we on? We're on half an hour, people. It is. What's the time? Holy fucking shit. It's 6:24. We've got 6 minutes to upload this and watch Planet Earth 3. That's it. Attenborough awaits, people. That's it. 6:30 on a Sunday night. I've got to get it done. Anyway, that was episode 313. I don't know why I'm still saying that. That's this week's episode, I should say, isn't it, of the Ben Briggs podcast. Tune in for next week's exciting episode. Same time, same channel. Have a good fucking week, motherfuckers. I hope the cold won't get to you too much. Keep it real. That's the first time I'm ever in the, ending the podcast on this. Yeah, keep it real. Why not? On a Sunday. And I'll speak to you next week. Take care.